all these people throughout Europe come along and say, you know what, it's not too late to create a country, a system where the least, the people who have the least have a chance. We're tired of the principalities and kingdoms of Europe, which are nothing but licensing system where one family ordained by God owns all the goods and services. Damn it, it's not too late. We're going to create the United States of America where anyone can come and execute a hope and a dream where there's less licensing caps and like one giant family owning everything of Germany. Much reached a point in my life where I accepted that all people are just the same as animals. But here's the thing, I have no expectations of animals. And that was my mistake in life is not because you love animals.
Yeah.
When you see a bunny suffering, it breaks your heart and you want to help it. And you want to put a nice bedding down for the bunny, and you want to pet the bunny, and you want to love the bunny, and that's wonderful, and that's who I am. But I'm also very conservative. So us conservatives believe in caring and loving for the bunnies. But when you start to believe that the bunnies, or the giraffes, or the zebras, or the tigers, or the lions, or the species of animal we call humans, can behave in a rationally logical, honest, ethical, moral sort of way, you start to fool yourself into believing that the animals are something that they're not. That does not mean you shouldn't love them. Love your fellow man.
Yes.
Love your fellow woman, just like you love animals. But have no expectations.
I agree with that, but you know, have you ever had mustard rabbit? The French do it fantastically. Yes.
Well, I wouldn't cook an animal. I mean, I cook a human.
Oh, no. So I guess some
trying to think how that works
that.
In there.
Yes, but
yes, have to think of how that works into my metaphor or analogy. Sorry. Okay, let's do it.
Mustard rabbit, you got my attention.
You ready? Are you rolling?
3, 2.
Wait, so we are rolling on that?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Oh, this whole time. Oh, okay, cool. We can
use that little metaphor analogy that I was coming up with. We are back at Meta, Unshackled, at Benzinga, day one. It's been a fantastic conference. There's all kinds of fascinating people here doing all kinds of deals. It's really, really a good show. Highly recommend Benzinga. We are near Miami in Florida. I'm here with my favorite co-host. Probably shouldn't say that.
Well, I'm... All right, fine. His sometimes favorite co-host. Hey, this is Max from Dope SEO.
No, Max is a funny guy, and he's an extremely knowledgeable guy, so it's really easy to host things with him. And we have brought two lovely human beings, just thinking about my analogy, to introduce you to out there in our audience, one who's running for Congress, which is fantastic.
Whoa, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, and that's always good to hear somebody who understands the cannabis industry, the cannabis marketplace, the cannabis supply chain, the cannabis ecosphere, the cannabis community, the cannabis plant, the cannabis culture. Who's running for cannabis? You understand all those things?
I do.
And she's running for Congress, so we're going to see how deep she understands those things in a second. But we're thrilled that you are running for Congress.
Thank you.
Because that's going to help our cause. And you are also an expert in the cannabis world, but
yes,
I'll let you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves to the audience.
Sure thing. Well, happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Dimitri and Co. Josh.
Co-host.
Oh, co-host, yeah.
Yes. My name is Kate Ruby. I am the president and CEO of KJH Strategy. We are a lobbying and regulatory consulting firm based out of New York City. I specialize in niche regulatory issues affecting the cannabis industry and licensees across the supply chain.
In what? Did you say niche?
Niche.
Niche.
Very niche, such as good manufacturing practices, auditing, which is required for all processing licensees in the state of New York. One of the very high bars included in New York's regulations.
Did you go to an Ivy League school?
I went to Occidental College in California.
Well, you use the word niche, you know.
Niche, yes.
I'm just asking. No, I'm a peasant. I'm a villager, and I'm trying to get back to the mountaintop.
Me too.
And I realized at this point in my life that I was overeducated, and sometimes I use fancy words. I'm trying to unravel that, and you use the word niche in conversation. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
It's a little different than who I am, but it's great. So congratulations. And yeah, so and
thank you very much.
I hope you win.
I appreciate it.
I don't even know anything about you yet, but I hope you win.
Thank you very much. I plan on it.
Awesome.
My name is Abigail Deal. I am running for U.S. Congress, District 3 in Maryland. I am an entrepreneur, born and raised in the district, Johns Hopkins, and grew up in Serena Park. I have been involved in the cannabis industry since 2015, since medical came to Maryland. Helped do that rollout and get that implemented in America, working with the legislators, the regulators, and the industry, kind of the middleman in between all of that to try and get the market going as best as possible. We still have some work to do, but we're doing very well. Maryland has been one of the better markets in the state and in the country for cannabis.
Better?
More limited and...
wait, one second. You triggered me.
Yes, and I do apologize about that.
No, so I don't like limited licensing caps.
Mm.
Yes. I agree with that, actually, and that's why the market's going to be interesting coming up in the near future.
But Maryland has... I want to talk about congressional campaign first. Then I want to do a deep dive into the Maryland market structure. Because most of our audience is B2B, and they're looking for opportunities. Yeah. And they're fascinated to meet people, but they really want to understand, where's the opportunity? Where's the angle for me? Where's that possibility? So first, let's quickly talk about your congressional campaign. Where are you at? What do you need?
Thank you. Appreciate that. We are 4 weeks away from the primary. The primary is the only thing that matters. It's a very democratic district. So we've got 22 of us in the primary, which is May 14th.
20 what?
22 candidates. Yes,
wow.
We've got five.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
That's a lot.
Five elected officials, two seating state senators, three House delegates, and one police officer from Capitol Hill, the riots. So we have about six people that are in the spotlight for the career politician. So they're kind of dividing up that vote. It's very interesting to watch. Some people are very confident about four different people winning. So we do have quite the landscape. We've got our biggest debate tomorrow evening, 18 people in Annapolis, Maryland.
Wow. So you're flying out of here.
I am. I fly out tomorrow morning.
Okay. Awesome.
Yes. And it's the kind of the big debate for the campaign. 6 to 9, it will be live streamed.
And this is
right
interesting.
Now, I am kind of in a lane by myself, or not completely, but less crowded lane. So I am not the career politician. I am an entrepreneur. I've got produce markets working with local farmers. And then I also dove into medical cannabis. I care very much about that. So I'm kind of in a lane that's involved with politics. I've been our senior cannabis champion, our senator in Maryland. I've been working with him as a senior cannabis advisor since 2018, supporting farmers, hemp farmers, cannabis farmers, and trying to put that all together the right way. So I've been very involved, but I do see some disconnect, and I think that there's challenges and things that we could fix and do better. So my big platform is about, yes, cannabis I fully support. However, I have a platform that's a little bit different. I dislike problems, and I like solutions. So I've got a platform about clean food, clean water, clean energy, and clean medicine. And we've got tangible projects that we're working on for each of those that have real results. So clean food, I work with local farmers, bringing fresh, healthy food into every single school cafeteria, hospital cafeteria, prison cafeteria, military academy, really every cafeteria we can get healthy food into. Food is medicine, and we need to start fixing that and fixing the root problems with mental health and physical health down the road later.
I'd like you.
Thank you.
She's a good person.
She is.
I love the Democrats.
And as a lobbyist, I will tell you, not often do you find those people in politics. We need more of them.
Right.
Yep.
I'm a hardcore libertarian, but I understand the Democrats mean well. They want good ideas, big projects, big solutions. Scare me, but I know they mean well. You know what I'm saying? Because they always end up poorly, but I'm just in practice.
I think
but they mean well.
Yeah. The party system's a little bit broken, guys. I think that we really have to stop pointing fingers and blaming each other, and we have to start working together to get things done. I firmly believe that. I think 90% of us are on the same page and have moral compasses that are pretty similar. We've got 5% on either end that are screaming very loudly, making us think that we're way more divided than we actually are. And I do think it's time to start working together to get things done.
The only way I can get things done is if I get away from everybody. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. I just need isolation. I need to be Luke on the island somewhere,
Yeah.
But he had little birds hanging out too. Didn't he have birds in Star Wars?
We like the animals.
Yes, I'm just a big fan of animals. How many voters are in that ecosphere in that? How many active Democratic voters are you guys?
Got about 325,000 Democratic voters to about 100,000 Republican voters for this district.
And the 325,000, how many of them are active primary voters?
It's different every year. Presidential elections bring a little bit more out to the table. So I think we're expecting, give or take, around 40% to come out, hopefully.
To about 150,000? So you can actually call. I mean, you guys are dividing up a small ecosphere.
We are. My win number, from what we figured out, is around 28,000.
What a fascinating race. Are you helping her on this race?
I am helping
She's not
her.
Helping enough. I just caught that.
No, we just met yesterday, though, but she's been one of the supporters since I met her yesterday. Yes. She's joined the team.
Are you walking door to door?
We are.
Now you are.
We are going to arrange a canvassing effort.
Right.
Yes.
She's door to door. Look, I'm coming.
She's a vaxxer.
Yes. But fortunately, I live on the West Coast, so I have an excuse. Okay. You see how I trapped her there?
Nice work.
Okay, door to door, but you're supposed to say you can make phone calls.
You can.
Okay. I'll make some calls.
We'll have Val get you activated.
Okay. So you have a good shot. You just need to get 28,000. How many say?
28,000 is
28,000 people lined up, and boom, you're in Congress.
We do.
What happened to the seat? Was there some other Democrat in there before?
There was John Sarbanes, and he's healthy and doing a fantastic job. None of us expected him to retire or, let's say, shift gears and not rerun. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I was actually very set on getting into politics, and I really wanted to run. So there was an open Congress seat in another district in my state that had opened up David Trom's seat. He was going for Ben Cardin's Senate seat, so I was thinking, I'd done a lot of work out there, the cannabis industry. We've got multiple cultivations out there. The one that I've been working on for a few years was out in Hagerstown, so I had a network in the 6th District, and I really wanted to get involved, so I was kind of putting together an exploratory committee to see if I should go out there and run the race, and then I asked out loud. I believe in karma very much, and what you put out there comes back, and I really wanted to stay in Annapolis and stay in my hometown district and run in where I was born and raised, and I really put that out there, and 3 days later, John Sarbanes announces that he's not rerunning.
Wow.
Ask and you shall receive.
So you're from Maryland?
I am, yes.
Wow, excellent, excellent. That's fantastic. So I have two litmus tests for politicians. One we don't need to get into is, do you believe that public health is an art or a science or a combination of both? That's my litmus test over there, but this is the wrong format to talk about that.
Okay.
The other one is not an abortion test. The other litmus test is, do you fundamentally oppose the concept of licensing caps, yes or no? And if so, why? Licensing caps. Because you guys had to wrestle with that in Maryland. She's...
Yes.
Yes, well, good. Okay, so you got my vote. Would you fundamentally oppose licensing caps? Are you okay with them?
I do fundamentally oppose them. There is some talk in New York about oversaturation.
No such thing.
No such thing. And I do believe that you have to have a good brand. You have to, again, I do lobbying.
It's up to the consumers and patients to determine.
It's up to the consumers and patients, not the government, because everybody should have a shot.
Yes.
Everybody should have a shot
right.
to compete. And if you work with folks like myself, my Dazed guy is right over there, Chris Fianello, one of the owners of Dazed, along with Keyshawn Warner and Rich Raynone. They've got a shop in Union Square, New York. We're working on a couple other locations in the city.
We're going to have Meet Unshackled out at the CWBC in New York in first week of June.
Nice.
We'll come
see
visit you,
there. You
guys. Yeah.
Yes. But to that point, they have a great brand. They've also got a couple licenses in Massachusetts. They have a great brand.
You think they oppose licensing caps? I'm just kidding. You'll have to ask them.
You'd have to ask them.
Once people
yes.
get their foot on that first step,
yes.
they tend to kick people off of it. Keep people down.
Yes, but I think
I'm doing a kicking motion over
yes,
here.
Yes, and that the New York Post has some... there was an article in the New York Post yesterday that pertains to that, but I think...
Share that with me. That's awesome.
Damien Cornwell, the Cannabis Association of New York, wrote a letter to the Office of Cannabis Management and the Cannabis Control Board requesting that when licenses are doled out in the future, there are evidence-based methodologies used to inform the rollout of additional licenses, meaning do we have the data on where the current licenses are potentially do we know, you know, the market capacity, how many folks are buying legal, for instance, how many folks are not? Of course, New York is a very fledgling marketplace, and there's a lot going on when it comes to the regulatory rollout in terms of a gubernatorial review that is a commission established by the governor not more than about a month ago to investigate what's going on with licensing. So personally and professionally, I believe that we need to ensure that everybody has the opportunity to compete. So no, I don't believe that there should be caps, but I do believe that potentially, which New York did not do, they used a randomized queue, they need to evaluate the applications when it comes to, does this person have the capacity to operate?
Mm. Dangerous concept, but interesting.
The law lays out criteria to be considered and potentially to be scored. New York backed away from the scoring system, deferred to a random lottery, and capped. It's in an FAQ, so that's not in the law or the regulations.
Right.
So there is no cap in New York right now, but effectively there is a cap.
Right. So you the problem with this is, remember a movie by Tom Cruise called Minority Report, where they were trying to guess beforehand whether or not people actually would commit a crime?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
With all government systems, no matter how well intended, if you create the structure where the government is pre-guessing whether or not somebody will fail or screw up that regulatory issue that we're concerned about them screwing up, we're creating a Minority Report reality where people don't have a chance to execute their hopes and dreams. And the people we're hurting the most are the uneducated, the poor, the ones who don't come from family backgrounds. I'm not even a Democrat, but I realize this real quickly. Those people who have the least and have the least amount of knowledge and access to lawyers and lobbyists and stuff, we're hurting them the most if we have any government barrier to entry that presupposes that they need to be certain ways or know certain things getting involved.
Yes.
I say let them all get involved and let them fail and let them get their licenses revoked. And that's what I'm trying to educate government officials and politicians and regulators to understand. I know you mean well, but the danger is in crushing the poorest of the poor. My mom's a villager from the mountains of, my grandmother was a villager, my mom was too, but from the mountains of Oaxaca. My grandmother, she knows nothing about lobbying. She knows nothing about regulation. She knows nothing about zoning. She knows nothing about testing, but she can grow onions.
Yes.
And those onions are going to find their way up to the United States.
Yes.
So if you create rules and situations that require her to do more, she can't get through them.
Yeah.
And that's why, however well-intended these government ideas are, they're dangerous because you crush the hopes and dreams of the poorest of the poor.
Of course. And so instead
of... That's what I'm saying. My Democrat over here gets that. I think she's a Republican.
I'm a nonpartisan policy professional, but I'm a moderate. But
like
you know...
She's very good at that. She make her your chief of staff.
I agree. To your point, though... You know, New York needs to...
She's got to walk some first, though. Go ahead.
New York needs to fix a lot of problems before they start capping licenses. They need to open up... By the way, we're not just talking about retail. They need to open up applications for the Tier 3, Tier 4, and Tier 5 cultivator licenses. They need to allow for indoor lighting situations. They're not opening that up at all. Right now, the only operators that are allowed to grow 100,000 square feet indoor are the medical companies. Now, they're not allowing our social equity... or our hemp farmers to compete for those licenses, for those higher licenses. They wanted to decentralize the marketplace. Now, you can say that there are advantages to that idea, but I say let's clean up the illicit shops first. First things first, let's make sure that people don't have any other options when it comes to buying legal, or let's make it as hard as you can to have an illicit shop in New York. Let's also...
We can chop off their fingers.
Hey.
I'm just saying, you know, criminal versus... my mind has no limits. And very few of us wrestle in life, like, what should the proper criminal and civil sanctions be for behavior that doesn't participate in the regulated environment and commerce structure that we want. So it's very, very rarely that people actually reflect on that concept. But in cannabis, we're reflecting upon it all the time. How do you promote the behavior that you want in civilized, regulated society?
The carrot or the stick, right?
Criminal or, I say cut off their fingers. You bring in a load from Mexico, we're taking your balls this time.
Whoa.
You thought 40 years in a federal jail were bad? I run truly. If we're going to cut off your balls. Oh, wait, did I say that?
I mean,
probably shouldn't have said that.
That would do the trick.
No, but if you ask somebody who has a license in Florida or something, how would you like the regulatory structure to be created? And they'll say, well, in a way that most benefits me. And so how do I keep the black market, the gray market out of Florida? Well, then I create really, really, really strict criminal sanctions. These really smart people in Machiavellian ways are hiring lobbyists and lawyers to manipulate things on their own behalf, especially those that got on the first stepping stone or the first rung of the ladder, and they see other people coming behind them and they just want to kick down. This stuff is happening, and you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what
And what frustrates me about New York is the Democrats are supposed to be the smart ones. They're supposed to be the smart ones. I thought they were until COVID policy, but the Democrats are supposed to be the smart ones.
Well, exactly, okay? And they made it harder for those people, exactly like you said, because not everybody can hire me.
Obviously, but when she's your chief of staff, you guys need to get out there and educate people as the importance of a free market economy. The Democrats have to be the ones that educate people about a free market economy in cannabis. Why? Because the Democrats are the ones who are willing to get into the nitty-gritty of the regulatory structures of how these cannabis marketplaces are working.
Yep.
And that's a really tragic situation I see happening across the country, is the Republicans, who are kind of free market oriented, whatever, business people who should like a free market, they're not getting involved in the nuances. They're just saying, I hate cannabis, I don't want it to be legal, go away. The Democrats will say, no, cannabis is cool, I want it to be legal. And then all these activists come out them with licensing caps, social justice this, blah, 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 plan policy this, we can manipulate this kind of thing to achieve this kind of thing. No, fuck that. We need an open market. We need a free market. We need access to the most downtrodden individuals out there who can't navigate their way through government. They have no hope. And that's what's killing me. In New York, could have, if the Democratic politicians would have said, okay, we control this thing. We control New York. Let's show humanity what a free market looks like. Let's show the country what opportunity looks like, where you can, your hopes and dreams, you can come here, you can open up a brand, you can open up a retail store, and there's a lot of them, and you're going to fail, but, you had a chance.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Very much so.
Am I crazy?
I do have a question about that.
I didn't interrupt you.
No, and guys, we go through this all day long about the free market compared to the limited licenses. Is it too late? Like, we have already established all of these states, all of these people have invested and gotten these established, and I'm not saying it is, I'm asking because I'm curious the answer there. Have we gone too far to go backwards now?
Sometimes it takes centuries. France, Germany, Luxembourg, they were there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And Adam Smith comes along. The revolutionaries come along. The Renaissance comes along. The all these people throughout Europe come along and say, you know what? It's not too late to create a country, a system where the people who have the least have a chance. We're tired of the principalities and kingdoms of Europe, which are nothing but licensing system where one family ordained by God owns all the goods and services. Damn it, it's not too late. We're going to create the United States of America where anyone can come and execute a hope and a dream where there's less licensing caps and like one giant family owning everything of Germany. And we're going to start the United States of America. So is it too late?
No, never.
They didn't think it was too late.
And I love that.
John Adams didn't think it was too late. Franklin didn't think it was too late.
Well done. And I respect that answer very much so. And I love that.
I just came up with that right now.
It was beautiful. It was beautifully said.
No, I like you guys.
What's our solution? Because, again, I like solutions instead of problems. And how do we move that forward appropriately?
The solution is electing you, honestly. The solution is electing you. The solution is you continue to keep doing what you're doing and rise up and keep on sharing your knowledge and your wisdom. Just take the little squeeze of lemon that I gave you talking about freedom and push it forward.
Make some lemonade. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But you guys have the knowledge. You have the capacity. You have the skills. You have the energy. You're out there. You're doing it. You're going to be in Congress. You're one of the top people in New York, probably cannabis. And you know, just the solution is tell people that this matters.
It does,
you know,
matter.
I tried to educate the head of the UFCW, the head of the Teamsters, who were involved in cannabis policy nationally. I'm like...
Well, you want to talk about opportunity.
Yes.
My dad is a Teamster. My dad was a truck driver. I'm from Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got a scholarship, a full ride to Occidental. Blew that because I smoked too much weed and graduated from Brooklyn College. But then, before going on to grad school...
But you learned how to use the word niche, though.
I learned how to use the word
niche. I can't even pronounce it.
They only teach that at Occidental, by the way.
That's like...
but the point is, I won the Teamster. One of those scholarships was the Teamster scholarship.
Right.
Local 707 and the Union scholarship. And... because of the opportunities that I had, you know, regardless of, you know, smoking too much weed when I was a youngster, you know, without those opportunities, I would not be the person I am today. And we need to give everybody those opportunities in cannabis. We need to reduce the stigma. We need to reduce the overly burdensome regulations. And I'm a regulatory consultant.
Right.
And I'll tell you right now, we have to reduce them. Right. I can't be on site every day, all day.
You're educating to put yourself out of a job.
Well, hopefully not.
She's like, damn it, I didn't realize
yes,
that.
Yes, hopefully not. But just to operate.
Now, then you could run for Congress.
I think Abby's got that covered.
No, in New York.
Right here.
Yes.
And then you guys can maintain freedom together.
Freedom and opportunity and, you know, having the right policy mechanisms in place for folks to succeed.
You know, and it's different. Like, the Teamster scholarships, yeah, there's a finite amount of money, okay?
Yeah.
So the Teamsters have to determine who gets those scholarships. And there can't be an endless amount of scholarships. There's just a finite amount of resources. But the goal of the human experience is to create systems that will help the individual thrive.
Yep.
And if you create a system where the government artificially creates a limited number of scholarships, licenses, it doesn't need to. You see what I'm saying? There's no need to. There's no necessity to. Oh, wait. Well, you want to make sure businesses don't fail. You know, there are all these weird justifications. But what's over here on the teeter-totter is you create a system where people's who have the least are hopes and dreams are crushed. And this is what I wanted to say about the Teamsters thing quickly. Sorry, it shouldn't be about me, but you got me excited here. Because you know why I'm excited? Because this is my spiel, and I like talking about this. And you guys are going to be much more active, and you're extremely intelligent. You're going to be out there. You're going to be kicking ass. You're going to be in Congress. You're going to talk to New York people. But we need to talk about this. This is significant. And the Teamsters and the UFCW, I'm like, don't ever endorse any legislation or any initiative or any referendum that have licensing caps. And they're like, well, you know, we're more concerned about payroll and workplace safety and, you know, vacation and sick leave. I'm like, no. Licensing caps destroy the hopes and dreams of the employees.
Well, and we have to, there are obviously one of the arguments, I'm sure
if
you know.
The Teamsters would have held their ground and say, New York, do not legalize licensing caps. People would have said, why? Well, because you don't want your employees to learn how to be a worker, to learn how the industry works and then be restricted by government.
Yeah. Well, and of course, what a lot of people don't realize is cannabis brings jobs. Cannabis brings jobs to these communities. Tons of jobs.
Yeah. I'm talking too much.
No,
huh?
I had an idea.
She's like, are you going to keep talking?
No, I love it. I had something that I want to run by you guys and get your opinion on it. I care very much about local farms and food. I think food is medicine. And I think that we are failing our farmers, our agricultural farmers that are growing healthy food for our communities by not supporting them in any way. I was on the phone last summer with one of my farmers. I have produce markets, and he's sitting there. He's like, Abby, my field is full of corn, melons, tomatoes, and I don't have anybody to pick it, and I can't get it to you. And I'm sitting in downtown Annapolis looking around at people eating potato chips and at this issue that we have of a disconnect of supporting our local farmers and fresh, healthy food. Ultra-high processed food is causing trouble. So we really need to start supporting like local farmers there, and we're failing them. I came to Maryland, and it was actually before the adult use bill came on board, and I said, hey, we should be supporting our local agricultural farms and saying, hey, guys, like, we'll support you, grow 80% food for our communities, and then 20% cannabis. That will give you something exciting that will bring you employees that want to come work. Nobody's, like, you know, harvesting tomatoes isn't sexy anymore. So these next generations don't want to go work at the family farm. They want to go work in tech and in finance and New York and D.C. and or cannabis. So we're building these indoor farms for people to go work in these indoor farms, and we're failing our farms that have already been established. I really think that we have a major opportunity with supporting our food chain, helping our food crisis, supporting our local farmers with fresh, healthy food, and giving them the opportunity to grow cannabis, which will then in turn support like more jobs and all the things. But it's kind of supporting existing infrastructure that's already there that's being left behind. What do you guys think of that idea?
Oh, I think it's great. Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
I mean,
I talk too much.
So interesting that you would say that, Abby, because one of the first projects I worked on back in 2022 was with the Cannabis Association of New York Policy Committee to write. I actually wrote, although it wound up getting back channeled to other folks who contributed to it, but we came up with a criteria to grandfather in the hemp farmers into cultivation licenses and processing licenses, and I wrote the proposed piece of legislation that we then gave to the state, and they added some more provisions prior to it, amending the MRTA, New York's legalization law, creating an adult use conditional cultivator license and an adult use conditional processor license to folks who had been active and compliant in the New York State hemp industry for 2 years prior to legalization. So those are our current those represent the majority of our current cultivators and processors. Now, because of New York's laws, a lot of those folks have been losing a ton of money. They've been planting cannabis instead of other crops in certain areas that are designated for cannabis on their farms. And, you know, while these folks are now growing cannabis, these people are farmers, right? And we need to support them. We need to support the vast portfolio of crops that they can grow. And we need to not make it, again, overly burdensome to do both cannabis and other crops at the same time. And a lot of folks have, you know, some of them have, you know, discontinued some of their farming operations because the regulations require so much intense effort to comply with on a regular basis. And we're talking about small family farms. We, you know, again, we don't want these people to fail, but how do we create a marketplace where they are empowered to succeed?
You get the government out of the way. And you educate government officials that they need to get out of the way as much as possible. That, I mean, you encourage them. You say, we need to remove regulation. We need to remove licensing. That's how they succeed or fail.
Oh.
And ultimately, people will fail. And you let the consumers, the way I was thinking myself is, I spend my dollars on, I love farmers markets.
Thank you for the support.
Love farmers markets.
Good job.
And I will spend my dollars on produce. And other things. I'm thinking about all the things you can buy at farmers markets now, because they're not just farmers markets. There's arts and crafts, all kinds of other handmade stuff. So I will spend my dollars that way, and that's how I will actively support it. But we need to educate government officials to get out of the way. And you guys are very involved in cannabis policy, and you're talking to a lot of Democratic officials out there in New York, you know, and they need to understand the importance of the free market economics.
I'll tell you something. I was in Arizona for New Year's. I was there for a wedding.
We made a disaster in Arizona, so sorry.
Well, here's what I'll say. I'll tell you one thing. The weed was way better, okay? And well, I wouldn't say this. The prices were much less for an infused pre-roll. I bought two infused pre-rolls. With glass tips, I spent $40. Now, New York, to get a high-end pre-roll like that, it's a little bit more expensive because of the taxation structure.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know everything about Arizona, but it seems like it to be less burdensome.
We're also like 10 years ahead of you guys in the whole cannabis thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no, there's... Yeah. The marketplaces will always sort themselves out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's reasons why Arizona has good product, mostly because it's secretly coming in from California really easily across the border all day long and being checked in behind the scenes.
New York has that problem too, and we're all the way across the country.
Yeah, but is it a problem or you know?
I don't know if it's a problem, but then we need to harness it. You know, how do we empower those people to be legal? And what are the reasons why it's not compliant? And we can name them off the top of our head. Taxation,
yes.
Regulation, okay?
Keep taxes down.
overly burdensome taxation structures and overly burdensome regulatory structures.
Yes, and licensing structures.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm, you with us?
I am.
She's over here taking notes.
No, I don't think I'm going to go as far as you.
I am a free market
okay,
guy. I am a libertarian.
What I'm saying is we're seeing the effects of it in New York. We're seeing operators struggling, well-financed operators struggling to comply, doing very risky behavior like transporting cannabis from California
right.
to New York, then running it through the testing system or slapping a New York label on it.
Right. So, but here's where you need to be careful. And this is, they will hire their lawyers and they will hire the lobbyists and they will go to the politicians and the regulators, people make decisions and say, hey, you guys, we're struggling to survive. You need to cap the licenses and not issue any more. No, you're struggling to survive because the taxes are too high. You're struggling to survive for other reasons. But they'll utilize that to limit their competition. That's exactly what the Florida Initiative is. That's exactly what we did in Arizona. It's a playbook that people use to keep other people off the first stepping stone or the first rung. And though there's like 10% of the businessmen out there will actively participate that way. 80% are just happy to be there, and 10% have no clue of what's going on. But they will do that, and they'll hire the lawyers, and they'll hire the lobbyists, and then manipulate the hell. And you're going to find this in Congress all the time. When you get there, people are going to be coming at you, and they're really trying to manipulate the system and the structures that we live in, the regulatory structures, the market structures that we live in, for self-serving purposes. And that's tragic.
Sometimes it's not all bad, right? Sometimes it's like, can you hire me to write some comments on this rule that makes absolutely no sense? Because if we loosen it up, it'll be good for this entire license category.
Right.
If we allow, for instance, our processors to sell Delta 8, Delta 10, and Delta Hemp Derived Delta 9 products across state lines, even though we banned it in the retail space in New York recently, we are allowing them to engage in interstate commerce and make money. Now, do we need to look at those hemp regulations, and are people suing and looking at those hemp regulations? Yes. However, how do we reduce, you know, not everybody wants to do it just for themselves. I've written comments and lobbied for folks who, yes, it will help their operation, but it will help an entire category. Now, I agree with you. There are folks that are doing that, doing more than that, and specifically writing regs or proposed regs and proposed laws just for themselves and to gatekeep. And no, I don't believe we should be engaging that behavior.
So, I don't know who you represent in New York, but if interstate commerce happens, right, will you welcome the importation of products of manufacturing and cultivation? I'll give you a second to think about this before you answer so you can be careful. Will you welcome the importation of manufactured products and cultivation from Oregon, Washington, and California, Colorado, et cetera?
Well, there are certain conditions in New York, just agricultural and environmental conditions, that make growing much more expensive, cultivation.
Right?
So I think that our operators should have a chance to compete. But, of course, they are going to be competing against operators from every other state, and especially those that can grow out west. Now, maybe New York can do retail better. Maybe New York can do processing better. But, and I'm not saying that they should not have a chance to grow. They should. But they need to be able to compete, again, against other operators from out of state. I don't think we should block them out. No. Do I think we should adopt the CAOA? Hell no. I think there needs to be a lot of changes, because the CAOA allows for, as it's currently written, allows for the continuation of state regulatory and taxation market, and then it adds another tax on top.
No, those taxes are ridiculous.
Probably FDA regulation on top.
Yes. Mm.
And TTB regulation and ATF regulation on top. No.
Democrat. You got to educate the fellow Democrats why taxation hurts.
Very much so.
Yes.
I'm here for that.
Yes, because they don't understand that. They think it's like a, it's just going to happen magically, but you see the people suffering, the company suffering.
Yes. Yeah.
So if I'm a manufacturer or a cultivator in New York and I'm like, Kate, can I hire you to slow down the interstate transportation of cultivated products and manufactured products into New York now that we have federal legalization, because she is up there and she's made it all magically happen. What do you do?
You know, I take clients.
I answer you. I like you because I'm asking you these really tough questions. And you're like, whatever.
She's here for it.
Yeah. I have such a great answer.
Like, yes. So what do you do?
I take clients based. So, of course, again, I'm a nonpartisan policy professional. That's right. Important. I take clients up based on, you know, my value system and their value system. I don't accept every client. In fact, since I started my own firm in January, there are folks that I have not called back for various reasons. So if I think that it's the right fit, you know, I consider every engagement, but depends on the person, depends on the personalities, and it depends on the specific ask. Depends on the market conditions as well.
I think you should focus on getting her elected Congress, and then you come in as a chief of staff. Max and I will come up and have dinner with you guys and chat, remind you guys about fighting for the free market, and you guys can say, oh, you guys are cute and you're funny and the kids love you, but there's the reality of this and that, and fine, you do what you need to do. I don't live in that reality anymore. I just don't care. I honestly just don't care. I tell the truth. It is what it is. It doesn't matter. And I've seen too much to trust the government. I really don't even trust people anymore. But what is the government but a combination of the people? So whatever.
That's why we need folks like that.
I agree with you. Yes. And actually, I'm very upset about it and disturbed, which is why I'm diving in. I don't like to complain about it, but it's outrageous.
She's a go-getter. She's a go-getter, and she's a go-getter for cannabis, too.
No, we are 100% on your side. And we want you to be in there, especially if you're bringing her on as chief of staff.
Yes, I am.
Because your policy understanding of cannabis will be extremely...
We've got Val as well, part of the team.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. I'm just kidding. Sorry about that.
There's only a policy advisor.
Yes.
There's multiple positions.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Let's door-to-door. You got to go door-to-door for her. She needs 28,000 votes.
Yeah.
I hope all your friends and family are going door-to-door. This is where you find out who your real friends and family are.
It's been fun.
Yeah. 28,000 votes is so doable.
It is. It really is. And that's what's one of the, again, I'm going to say challenges. I've actually really enjoyed this whole process and this journey. I love problem solving. I love meeting people. I love connecting. But the challenge has been to see who I thought would be there and who has been and who hasn't been. And it's been eye-opening, to say the least. People that I didn't expect to be there have been above and beyond. And people that I thought would be there all day, I haven't seen since I announced.
I really hope you win. Because obviously everything's so gerrymandered, Democrat, Republican. It is what it is. It's like 14 competitive districts in the country. But we need people who understand cannabis economics, the cannabis business, Democrats and Republicans.
And people that can work together and to solve problems. That's what I'm here for, as well as this beautiful lady right here.
And we will hang out in New York in June.
Oh, yeah.
The CWBCE.
I might even have a table. We'll see. KJH strategy.
I'll come up for that.
Well, we should talk about working together, but we'll talk about that afterwards. Max, thank you for hosting today.
I'm just... holding up the end of the table.
it is late in the afternoon, and there's the Hub International, friends of ours, is having a happy hour downstairs. Yeah. So we're going to go down there. We're going to continue this conversation. Yes. And if you were at Benzinga, you would be able to participate in these conversations. But all of the contact information for them will be listed below. You guys, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Eat Unshackled.
Yep. Appreciate you. Appreciate you having us.